The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Today we're going to talk about feasts and celebrations. Now, we've been hearing a lot of stuff about education and how to make that. I'll apologize before I get going. I'm a wanderer, and I did not wear something that I can wander around with this thing clipped onto me. So I'm going to, if I go back and forth, it's because I'm not used to standing still. We've been hearing a lot about ways to make education engaging and how to make it joyful and challenging yet rewarding. Methods to make information sticky. George Grant talked this morning about how to make relationships and covenant fellowships, and we do that over food. And feasts and celebrations are a powerful tool in our arsenal of education. And if you want to help students learn how to have these shared memories and how to make them excited about what they're learning, put feasts and celebrations in your curriculum. They are fantastic, and kids remember them way beyond what you think they're going to remember. It's been really exciting to me to put this into our curriculum and have students years later come back, and I hear them tell the younger students what to expect. They remember the details. So, before I get too far along, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Rhonda Forbes. I've been teaching at Veritas Academy in Leola, Pennsylvania since 2007. But even before that, I was part of creating and planning feasts and celebrations in my children's classrooms. I wanted the literature and the history that they were learning to actually make an impact on their minds. I wanted them to remember them in a way that was real, much beyond something they read in a very dry classroom. So, before we get too far and talk about the nuts and the bolts, what I wanted to do was talk about why it's worth it. Why bother? Because it is going to take a lot of time. It is going to take a lot of effort, especially the first year. The first year you plan an event, you have to set aside a good chunk of effort for that. But make no mistake, it is well worth the effort. It makes an impact on your students. And it is something that if you do it in a way that you can reproduce it year after year, it's not the same huge impact on your life of planning year after year. One reason feasts and celebrations are important is because you can bring the themes of books to life. We can reinforce those themes and impact a student. They actually internalize these themes when you create these feasts without them even realizing it. They're not sitting in a lecture, they don't feel like you're shoving something down their throat, and they're learning through the process. And face it, when we can bring literature to life, we have actually done the first step to true learning. Feasts give us an opportunity to employ all of the senses. And as teachers, we know when you're in a class teaching, you want to write notes on the board. You want to show them things because you have your visual learners who need to learn by seeing. You need to talk to them. You need to explain things because you have your auditory learners. You want to give them motions. You want to help them get involved in discussions and move a little bit for those kinetic learners. Feasts give you the opportunity to also use touch and smell and taste, and then they anchor in the memories. In a feast, they learn when they look at the decorations. They walk in and they see their imagination come to life. The things that they have only read about, all of a sudden, they can put colors to them. Hearing. You can give small instructional times in a feast. You can give small speeches in a feast. You can put music to a feast. If you want them to feel like something is regal, use music that invokes that feeling. If you're parading, and I'm going to give you examples of all these things, but when you're parading, use a march, and the students will remember it in a different way. When I do a murder mystery, and we'll talk about that later, we have jazz, and they pull all that into their heads, and it helps them to remember in a way that you just can't do from a lecture. And then, of course, the food. With food, you can smell it, you can taste it, you can touch it. And God has made our memories in an amazing way that when we employ all of the senses, you truly hold on to those things. Think about the books that you love. When you go back, it's because you have created a world in your mind that you entered, right? This is an example of trying to create a world for them to physically enter so that they engage with it in a very active way. Another reason that feasts and celebrations are so important is because we want our students to associate enjoyment with learning. We want them to look at learning as a fun process, as something that is exciting, as something that is worth the bother. I teach a lot of middle school classes, a lot of that logic class where they hit that age where they are too cool for school. And it's just really the thing to do to act like all of this is so beneath me and boring. Costumes are fantastic, and they don't have to be that hard. I'm going to give you some ideas on how to create costumes. It is really hard for that student in your class to be too cool for school when they're dressed like a squirrel and their friend is dressed like a woodland creature, and all of a sudden they're invested in this event that they're part of, and all those barriers come down, and before you know it, they're laughing and they're interacting in a way that's different than they do when they're sitting back and thinking about how important they are and how they're so insecure with where they are, okay? It also helps them to see each other in a different context. They're not sitting in the same seats that they always do with the same comfortable relationships. They're moving around, they're doing things differently, and all of a sudden friendships can form that are outside of the cliques that they're used to having. Feasts are a fun way to watch that happen. And frankly, let's face it, it's just plain fun. Once you have it planned, it's fun for the students, but it's also fun for the teachers. And what I would tell you, the most successful events that I have planned all involve the teachers. It's not just for the students. It's a chance for them to see the teachers in a different way. And our teachers dress up. And I involve teachers from other classes, okay? I teach math and omnibus, but I also pull in our other math teachers. I pull in our science teachers. I pull in teachers, they're Latin teachers. Their Latin teacher is Queen Susan. I am Queen Lucy. We have King Peter and King Edmund. Kids love, even if they won't tell you that, they love to have their teachers involved. When you're in grammar school and lower grammar school, the teacher is about the coolest person in your life. They understand you, they know you, and you think that they just hung the moon. By the time they're in about fifth or sixth grade, they struggle to be understood, right? They feel like no one understands me. No one really gets what I'm thinking. If they sit in a feast and a celebration with the teacher, and they watch us enjoy the process of learning, and they watch us laugh and get involved, they are much more likely to emulate that through their lives. If our goal is to have lifelong learners and not just stuffing information in their minds, we need to be part of it. We need to laugh along with them. And getting dressed up is a really good step to do that. All right, before we get to the nuts and bolts of it and go through all of that, I want to make sure that you understand that I'm only going to give you a few of the events, and then you can ask questions if you have other ones. I'll give you real details on about four events that I've planned. I'm going to give you a list of other ones, and then if you have questions, then you can ask me, and I'll be glad to go through it. But I don't want to overwhelm you with too much detail about things that you're not interested in. When you plan a feast, create the world through details. Okay, details are important. Think about it. Pause and plan and say, is this a formal event that I want? If it's a formal event, make it formal. Have a formal place setting. Actually have pretty napkins. Have a charger underneath it. Students are not used to being treated as if they are adults sometimes. I've been surprised at the vast array of experiences students bring to a classroom. Some are used to always sitting at formal tables, and so when we have a Swiss Family Robinson feast on these woven placemats and we are eating with our hands and we're pretending that we're on an island, it's a whole new world for them. Then you have others who never eat in a formal setting, and so having it set with the placemats and the twisted napkins and having chargers and having them dressed up is new for them as well, and it's exciting. It is easy to pull in themes from the books that you're studying. You can make placemats. I've made placemats for almost all of the events because it's a very easy way to set a table that the students can look at it and immediately their minds go to what they're studying. You can take and print out a picture that is reminiscent or reminds you of the event or the book that they're going through. Put it on cardstock, add a braid, laminate it. You have placemats that last for years. Food is critical. Think about the food that you should have at an event. And then, if you can, go get quotes from the books. Tolkien and Lewis are easy to find a lot of information about food. C.S. Lewis believed that food told you something about a culture of people. So I've gone through and found quotes. You can type them up, put a little banner on it, and then you set it up as a placard in front of each of the dishes. When the students go through and fill their plates, their mind goes immediately back to what they have read, and all of a sudden they feel like they are entering something special. It's fun to have a different food. In the Chronicles of Narnia, there are a lot of English foods that the students have no idea what that is. Have one or two. Lemon squash is an easy one. That sounds really weird to American ears. It's a frozen lemon drink. So when the students go up to the table and they see the little placard with lemon squash and they see the little quote from it and they actually drink it, or you use a spoon mostly, they feel excited about it. It makes something different and something new, okay? Miravor is a cordial that the elves gave to Gandalf, and then Gandalf gives it to the fellowship when they're in the snowstorm. Well, that changes a fruit punch into something special. Get a colored fruit punch, and I'll show you a picture of it. We actually float dry ice in a cup. The smoke is coming out. They see the placard, and all of a sudden, this fruit punch, it tastes the same, seems really special, okay? It's low-hanging fruit. It's easy to do this stuff, and it makes the students excited about the details. Their imagination, the things that they have thought through, come to life, and they're part of it. Every feast and celebration, I think, should be have some portion of active participation. What you don't want it to be is the students sitting there eating while you are lecturing. You want it to be an event. Students need to move, especially middle school ages. They need to move a lot. If there is a battle in your book, have a battle at the feast. Battles are easy. If you have outdoor room, you can use wooden swords, you can use foam swords. They're available at any toy store. You can make swords. Get a dad in your class. It's a great project, PVC pipe. Take a pool noodle, put it over the PVC pipe, wrap it in duct tape, keep it. You can use it for battles in every event, okay? Set up a few rules and the kids love it. If you're not outside and you're inside, take paper. We have a battle between the Picts and the Romans for Eagle of the Ninth. They take colored paper for the Picts and we ball it up and they are boulders. We have lines on the floor. They heave the boulders at each other, and the one at the end of the time frame that has the most of the other person's boulders in their land gets so many points. We have battles and we see who wins. Easy stuff. Just think it through. Use your imagination. The kids enter this with eagerness. They really do. Archery is in a lot of books. A lot of kids have never picked up a bow and an arrow. You might be surprised at how many people in your school have them, or if there is an archery supply place close to you, they actually will loan them or they will send people out to teach kids. We have, being from Lancaster, we have a lot of hunters, and there are a lot of bow and arrows in our school. But we have a really nice archery store down the street. They have sent people up to teach kids because kids love archery, and it's easy. You set a target up. All you do is you pull it back and let it go, and the boys are often shocked that the girls are not that bad. And at these ages, they're not that much weaker either. Now, as the boys get older, it's a big difference in strength. But in the younger ages, it's fun for them to compete to see who can get the bullseye. Some other things, if you have a trek, like the Hobbit, you know, they go on this long trek. If you have a couple trees, you can have the students march around, set up some large spiders, and they're in Mirkwood. You tell them they're in Mirkwood, they wander around, and you have different obstacles along the way, okay? There's a lot of ways to get motion into feasts and celebrations. But as an educator, the hardest thing is to make it reproducible, okay? Every student class has different gifts in their parents. And so I've done this a lot, and what I would tell you is the first year, get a couple parents to sit down and brainstorm with you and plan and write down every idea, even if it's something you're not going to be using that year, because it might be something that you can use in place of an idea for the next year, or it might be something that you find out works better than something you planned. So write down every idea. Come up with detailed planning documents. I have a folder for every feast that we do. And in that folder are all of the parent communications that I send out. It is the planning document with time frames. This is when you should start this. This is how you should do this. And here's the layout of what it looks like. Parent communication is critical. Your first communication with a parent should be telling them why you're doing this. This is asking your parents to volunteer to put their time and effort out there, and it's amazing how willing they are if they understand what the impact on their students is going to be. I try to explain what feast we're thinking about, what book it's hooked to, or what period in history that we're studying that it's hooked to, and why this will help their students. I have never had a problem with parents being excited about it if they understand that it's something important to their students and it's something that they will enjoy. And frankly, parents love to see their students get excited. When the day of a feast comes and the students are at school early and they have their costumes in their bags and they come up and say, Mrs. Forbes, I'm going to put this on your desk. I have had quite a few moms standing back in the halls and they are excited to see their seventh graders excited to come to school. The key to making it reproducible, keep and store your decorations. I have had some classes where the parents are incredibly artistic and creative. I can make the most of that by keeping that, store it, pull it out again the next year, and then the next year's class, maybe the parents are very organized, and they can help me figure out a better time frame or a better breakdown for the jobs. And then each year, it gets easier and easier on me as a teacher. Costumes. Now, I don't know if you do feasts and celebrations in your school, but costumes as a parent, I have four children, and I can tell you that I got really tired because I have a mix of boys and girls of recreating pharaohs and Cleopatra's every 2 years. My kids are all 2 years apart, and it seemed like they were never the same size, and I always had to make these costumes. So what I decided to do as a teacher when I started doing it for my own classes is I saved the costume pieces. I'm going to show you some pictures of some students. When we do Care Paravel, which is do along with the Chronicles of Narnia, we do a state banquet. I have the students dress up like the woodland creatures who would be there. You do not have to have them dressed so that they could go on a movie set and no one would know who they are. You don't have to be intimidated, and the parents don't have to be intimidated. A headband with a couple of ears made out of little fur and a tail that is pinned to a belt, and then they are dressed in similar colors, and all of a sudden you have raccoons and you have foxes and you have squirrels, and it was really a minimum amount of effort. I've also found that if I get a couple moms to help me put these together and I save them from year to year, they're pretty excited about the fact that I'm keeping them at school and then their kid 2 years down the road will have a costume that they don't have to make. A lot of moms and dads are willing to donate things so that they know it'll be there for their upcoming students or pupils year after year after year. This I can't emphasize enough. Pictures, pictures, pictures. When you pull it off, take pictures. Have a parent or a student, upperclassmen for yearbooks, get really excited. If you can get them out of a class and they're taking pictures to put it in their yearbook, keep all those pictures. Put them in your planning document. Parents are much more likely to volunteer to be in charge of something if they can see what it is they're trying to create. It's very intimidating to tell somebody that you want them to plan an entire feast. It's not as intimidating if you say, I have the costume pieces, and I have pictures of where everything goes, and I have some of the decorations. Let me show you. The first year, you need to have a couple parents that are willing to get on board with you and really invest in it. After that, if you keep this, it's very reproducible, and it becomes much more manageable. Here are some examples of some of the events that we have. This isn't all of them. In fourth grade, we study Marco Polo. And I don't know how many of you were involved in progressive dinners, but that sounded like a really good idea to go along with Marco Polo. Marco Polo travels. So they start at the school, and that's Venice. They then travel to a family's house, and that's Jerusalem. And they have the stuff there about him getting the holy oil and from the sepulcher. And then they go to another house, and it's China. And they get the gold bar, and we have a pirate, who's usually my husband, who attacks the van as they travel to the South Seas. And they have to produce the gold bar for safe passage. Kids remember the details because they have walked through it. The impact on each family is small. They only have to do one land. They only have to do a few things to get it ready. The kids love it. And I can tell you that my kids in college remember Marco Polo more because of this than the history card that they read in the week they spent talking about it in class. For Pride and Prejudice, I do a high tea. At this point, we actually, because that's ninth grade for our school, I actually talked to them about the expansion of the English Empire based on tea plantations and the import-export of tea and all of that. And it's a very small talk. It's about 10 minutes. At our school, we also have uniforms. So the costume for this is they get to dress up as if they're going to a high tea. And so the gentlemen come in their suits and their ties, and the girls come in their nice dresses, and they are ready for an event because it's different. And everybody in the school knows they're ready for an event. And the younger kids are looking at them, and they can't wait to be there. And the older kids are looking at them and remembering where they were. And it's fun to see them keep that year after year. For the Eagle of the Ninth, I already mentioned a little bit of that. We do a Roman versus Pict battle. The Picts were the Scottish natives, so I allow the kids to paint their faces. And they are the barbarics. You know, they're the ones that scream and yell in the fight. Then we have the Romans, and they make their own little helmets and shields that they can bounce the paper boulders off. And it doesn't take long, but it's fun. And the kids in upper grades look back and say, I remember. Do you remember what color we painted our face? And little things like that help to cement into their mind why Hadrian's Wall was even important. Okay. For the Chronicles of Narnia, I'm going to go show you a lot of pictures from Mr. Tumnus's tea party, from Care Paravel State Banquet. For the Hobbit, we do a Hobbit hike. They have Mirkwood Forest, like I had mentioned, but we also have Smaug. Now, they've got to battle Smaug if they're studying the Hobbit, but how do you do a dragon? Well, you get a refrigerator box. I am the queen of frugal. Lancaster is Amish territory. We are Mennonite in background, and we are frugal people. So things I'm telling you are cheap. Go to an appliance store. Get a refrigerator box. Get a mom or a student from art class who can draw. We got a 10th grader who could draw a dragon for us. She sketched out a dragon and painted it out very quickly. We cut holes in it, and they battle Smaug with bean bags, throwing them through the holes in Smaug. It helps them to remember the battle. The Lord of the Rings, we have a dinner with Elrond from Rivendell. And then in Great Gatsby, when we study that, we actually have a murder mystery dinner that is a 1920s dinner that they get to dress up for. In seventh grade, our students read the Chronicles of Narnia again. They've read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe when they were younger, but now we're going to read the entire Chronicles of Narnia. Early in the year, we do a Mr. Tumnus's tea party. I have an upperclassman or a teacher dress up as Mr. Tumnus. That's not as intimidating as it sounds. I do not sew. I can turn my sewing machine on, and I can sew straight lines. Well, sort of straight lines. I can sew sort of. Mr. Tumnus is felt. You take a piece of felt, take two pieces of felt, you trace out legs, and you sew and turn it inside out. The waistband is literally sticking elastic in it because I want it to fit year after year, person after person. So you can make a drawstring or you can make an elastic belt, and all of a sudden you have a fawn. Stick a tail on the back, and it looks like a fawn. He wears a tan shirt. He wears a red scarf. He has a curly wig. The horns are felt with cotton balls that are bobby pinned to the wig. He has an umbrella and a brown package. And he welcomes the sons of Adam and the daughters of Eve from Spare-Oom to the classroom. Kids get excited about this stuff. They really love to feel like they're being transported into a different place. We lay a table on top of the desk, we put a tablecloth, and that is simple food. It is scones, it is lemon curd. We employ Turkish delight, because most kids don't know what that is, and toffee. I was amazed when they plant the toffee, remember, and they plant the crossbar for the lantern, that's what it grows up from, in The Magician's Nephew. Kids don't know what this stuff is anymore. So add toffee and tell them there's soft toffee and there's hard toffee. And they get really excited then because now they have a taste that when they've read it, they can hang that memory on. Mr. Tumnus's Tea Party is a small event for us. After we have read the rest of the Chronicles of Narnia, we cap off our study with a state banquet at Caer Paravel. Caer Paravel is the castle that the kings and queens of Narnia rule from. Now, I want you to pause for just a second and think, what do you think of when you think of a castle? Okay, we didn't do turrets, okay? Close. Drawbridge, okay? Moat. Well, I'm thinking stone. I'm thinking you're inside the castle. Okay, well, I'll show you the turrets, but what we did is we were thinking stone. We were thinking tapestries. We were thinking stained glass windows. We were thinking what's going to invoke the sense of them eating inside of a castle. Now, our school is not even remotely medieval. There are no stones. We have some bricks, but there are no stones in our building. So we decided we needed to think of a way to have the students walk in and forget they're at school. And so what we did is we got refrigerator boxes again. And you literally paint circles in kind of rectangular shapes in gray. You take black paint and you outline it, do a little bit of relief, and these are our turrets around our fireplace. The fireplace is a bookshelf that we could not figure out how to move. It was so heavy. So what we did is we slid it across the floor and we got corrugated cardboard that is printed like stone. It's really cheap online. The benefit to that is that I have lots of it and I can recut it if I need to. Our room has moved a couple times and I still have this corrugated stone that I can repurpose in different rooms. We took black and put it in the middle, removed the books, put some firewood down at the bottom, and all of a sudden we have a mantelpiece at the end of our castle. Stained glass windows gave me pause. But what do we really think about? We think about color, right? Well, the dollar store has great cellophane. And if you take and you put pieces of cellophane together with electrical tape and you pin it up over a window, you have a stained glass window. And if you have a mom who's willing to help you do this and you roll it up, I've used these stained glass windows for 7 years now. And they still look just fine when we roll them out and pin them up. Pennies. It really does. The whole feast, all of this planning came out to about $15. So I'm not talking about an enormous investment. What you need to do to create an event and make the students excited is to think, what would I think of walking into? And then be bold enough to ask a parent, can you help me? Can you think about how to do that? These stone torts that got painted, they got painted by students and a mom on one Saturday for 3 Milky Way bars. That's what it cost me. They were so excited that they could paint with their mom out in the field that that's all they wanted. Now, for Narnia, I thought we had to have a wardrobe. We happen to have a big wardrobe-type shelving thing in our school. So I talked to our custodian, and he removed the back, which is now on screws, and we take it off every year. You take out the shelves. Now, this does not show the tension rod. We generally put a tension rod across and hang fur coats from the Salvation Army. You can get them for about $10. Hang them up on this tension bar, and the kids enter through the wardrobe. We open the door. That's how they come into the feast. Now, of course, they have to come into the woods. So we repurposed our Christmas trees from the classrooms, and we just put fake Christmas trees up. We do this in January. And if you notice the lantern, that was my really exciting thing. I got a nursery to give us an 80% discount because it was in January and it was for a school. They're really generous. So for $20, I have a lantern, or I have a lamppost that we use year after year after year, and a family donated it. They said, for that price, we'll buy it. You can have it always. Don't borrow it. And so now in my closet with all of my event stuff, I have a lamppost. The kids walk in through the door, they walk in through the fur coats, they walk in through the trees, and they enter Care Paravel. They feel like it's something really special. Now, these are some example costumes. I told you I have some very creative moms. This is a beaver costume. They donated the beaver costume. I could never make that if my life depended upon it. However, I can make dryads because that's just a green printed material that you cut a neckline out and then you tie a waistband around it with a ribbon and the girls are now dryads. The unicorn, it's a piece of fur. You can go to a lot of these fabric stores and cut things out and put Velcro and a styrofoam comb and now you have a unicorn. And they dress in colors that coordinate. They're not as hard to make as you think. Like I said, I don't sew, but I can glue, and that works really well. If you notice on the bottom, these gentlemen with the ears, right here, those are headbands with pieces of fur and a piece of wire that holds the ear up, a tail that hooks to their belt, coordinating clothing, and then their imagination. I have enough costumes for everybody in the class. That eases a parent's stress enormously. And then those students who want to make their own costumes can do that. And mom doesn't feel like I'm putting an extra burden on her. Instead, it's a fun adventure that they're doing. So we usually have 20 students or sometimes less. So I have 20 costumes. Now, by costumes, that means pieces. And so what I do is I send an email home and I say, your child chose to be a fox. We have ears, we have a tail, they need to have a shirt that is white or red and pants that are white or red or brown. They need a belt to hook the tail to and they're done. Little face paint of the nose and whiskers and their imagination takes it the rest of the way. Now any feast for Care Paravel would not be complete without our kings and queens. Kings and queens are easy. They're just capes and plastic crowns. And then we have a visit from Aslan. Now, we did have a lion head from a play, from a drama that our school had put on. So when you add a coverall, you have Aslan who walks down. To make it special, because we do this in seventh grade, and seventh grade is a big year in our school. It's that transition from grammar school to secondary. So we wanted to make them feel really important, so we actually parade through the halls. We start at one end of our school, and we parade through. And the music is really accessible with an iPod and little speakers inside of a basket that I carry that shouts the trumpet that we are coming. The students parade down through the hallway, and they throw little pieces of candy. Bite-sized candy gets every student out of every classroom to come see the parade, and they clean up the mess. The janitor has nothing to do because the kids will get all the candy. Then they come down, they go through the wardrobe, and they feel really special. The kids look forward to it every year, and the kids who were too old for this when I put it in place lament the fact that they did not get to be part of Narnia. Some events that we do with it are Hunt the Slipper and Blindman's Bluff. These were mentioned in Prince Caspian, so it's keeping true to the Chronicles, and they're very easy. If there's time, we try to have a small little sword contest where we have a circle, and they have to stay inside the circle, and the first one touched with the foam sword is out, and then they have this little contest at the end. These Chronicles are really important to them. They take a while for them to read. We talk about the friendships, and we wanted to make a big deal so that it had a lasting impact on their minds. Similarly, in eighth grade, we read Tolkien, we read The Hobbit, and we read The Lord of the Rings. Now, they just got done with Cair Paravel. I wanted the eighth grade feast to be different. So we decided that we would have it at Rivendell, and we would have it with the elegance of the elves. And so we have it in October so that we can offer a charge to our students, that we can charge them with all of these virtues that we're talking about in the fellowship, and it looks quite different. We do it outside. We have a courtyard in our school, and so we decided to have it out there. It's autumn. That reflects the end of the elves' time in Middle Earth, right? They're getting ready to leave. It's the end of their time, and the autumn helps it. The columns that you see are carpet rolls. We went to a carpet store. We got them to give us the carpet rolls that are inside. You paint them white. You sponge paint brown or gold on them, and they look like marble. The top of them are just pieces of wood that we painted to go along that we can set up. And then you have something that looks elegant, and you'll notice the corrugated stone that we used in Cair Paravel that I use again for Rivendell. We wanted this to be more formal. We wanted it to feel different. So we got seat covers, and we got matching tablecloths, and we sit it down at a very formal sitting for them. And then they feel more grown up. The food, again, it's really important. We have cheese and we have bread, just like they had at Tom Bombadil's house. We have Miravor, which I already talked to you about, where we put the dry ice in and the smoke comes out, and they think that's pretty exciting. But one of the highlights is the Limbus bread. That was really important in those stories. They haven't read it yet. Now, some of them are going to know it from the movies. I understand that. But they haven't gotten to that. So they're eating things that they will then remember when they're reading them in the books. Limbus bread is easy. Get somebody to make shortbread. Wrap it in cabbage leaves. Tie it with twine. Put it in a basket or on a platter, and they have their very own Limbus bread that they're taking. It's exciting to the kids. It's not that hard. It's really quite straightforward. We also, again, have the teachers dress up. We have Elrond. Now, if you could see this gentleman without the long hair, it just makes me laugh hysterically because he is very clean cut, very short hair, and the girls were quite taken aback when they saw Mr. Walker for the very first time with a long black-haired wig. But he is Elrond, and he talks to them, and they give a speech at each of the things. And it's we've tried to actually capitalize on the things that they are going to learn about when they read the Chronicles, I mean the Tolkien trilogy. And so Elrond talks to them about protection of others. And he talks to them about loyalty and friendship and perseverance. Because those are things that Elrond talked about in the book as well. And then we have the father of Gimli. We have Gloin who comes, and he is the dwarf king. And he talks to them about befriending others who may not be just like them. He talks to them about the importance of duty and doing the right thing, even when it's outside of your comfort zone. And then we have Gandalf. And Gandalf talks to them about not being deceived by evil. and about applying the lessons of the fellowship to our lives, and about always applying true wisdom, which is God's word, to everything that we do and everything that we say, no matter where we are. And they do this as the kids are sitting down, and they're sitting down with these columns, and they're sitting down at this fancy table setting. And they will listen to this in a different way because the teachers are dressed up and it's part of an event. And they can, I've had students quote back word for word some of the things that they have said that I guarantee you in a class lecture they would not have grasped quite as quickly. All of these costumes are pretty straightforward as well. The hardest one was our Gandalf. He is a very tall teacher at our school, so there were no graduation robes, which had been my original idea, and we actually had to have a mom sew it because he is 6'4", and they looked really silly coming up to here. So made a hat and a long beard, and he's Gandalf. Very convincing. Gimli is actually wearing a helmet. It's a World War II helmet that I found that looks fairly dwarfish, I think. Again, we have activities, and we wanted the activities to reflect each of the people groups. So for the elves, we have archery. They go out in the backfield. They shoot towards a target. They have a blast doing this. For the dwarves, we have them chopping wood. Now, in this day and age, this adds a lot of humor to the teachers because young men in eighth grade think they are amazingly strong. And they pick up that axe and they realize how heavy an axe is. And they also realize that it's not quite as easy as swinging it and hitting that piece of wood just anywhere to make it split down the middle. And by the end of this, our headmaster is actually, I've got him cut off, but Ty Fisher is our headmaster, and he enjoys coming out every year to help the boys learn how to chop wood because he remembers it fondly from his childhood, I guess. And it is fun to watch the guys get excited about splitting that piece of wood. And that's something that most of our suburban kids aren't doing on a regular basis, so it's a neat experience. And then we allow the girls, if they really want to try, and sometimes that can be a little humbling as well to the boys. But most of them don't, but occasionally they do. For the men of Middle Earth, we do a sword fight. We make sure that we have the girls sword fighting with the girls and the boys sword fighting with the boys, but sometimes the teachers get involved, especially the male teachers. They have a blast trying to get out there with the young boys. That opens up avenues of conversation and memory between students and boys and girls that is different than they're going to get. And it's amazing to me the conversations that we can have later. They are much more interested in my ideas about other things after we have laughed together, after we have had some fun together in an event like this. It opens up their questions about life, about God, about many avenues beyond the day of the feast. And then, of course, we can't forget the hobbits, so we eat. And it is a highlight. It's in the courtyard. Kids come as they are changing classes from other classes, and they peek out to the courtyard, and they anticipate the event with great eagerness, because when they get to eighth grade, they get to go out and do this as well. So we try to make sure that our feasts are there for everybody to see. They can't all participate, but we want them to be excited about them. The final one I was going to tell you something about was in detail is the murder mystery dinner. In ninth grade, we read The Great Gatsby. Now, when we teach The Great Gatsby, that's a time of great sadness. You know, the lost generation, we have to explain the history of it, and we have to explain that sense of hopelessness and despair that's in the literature. And then we try to make them enjoy a little bit of the lightheartedness with the fashions. Okay, so don't think that we're just saying everything that happened in the 20s was great. We make sure they understand that if it's not based on the grace of God, that's where we are as humans. But the 20s are fun to dress up, and they're fun to play jazz. And so I'm always amazed at how the students will get together and do the finger curls and the Marcel waves, and the girls get these long beads, and they go and they make great outfits from the consignment stores around us. The murder mystery dinner, they're in ninth grade. They want to do something even more grown up, so we have it on a Saturday night, and we have it at a family house. It has become such a fun thing that the parents actually vie to be part of it now. I've not had any problem with getting volunteers. Parents are the servers. Parents set their house up, and they come and they serve the food, and they interact with the students, and the students are part of a drama. Each student has a character that they play, and they're trying, somebody gets murdered, they don't know who it is during the night, and then they try to figure out who did it. So each student has a character they're playing. They're actually part of this. As doing this, we talk about the impact of all of the different pressures in our society, the glitz and the glamour and the superficial, frenetic pace that people were following in the 1920s. We play jazz music, we have a sit-down dinner, we play cards, and it is such a hit that the seniors this year have asked me if we will do some sort of mystery dinner for them with a different modern theme because they want to do it again before they leave Veritas. This is something that, again, I keep the decorations for. If you print out great big playing cards and laminate them, it's very easy to go to somebody's house and hang it up on the wall. We made centerpieces with carnations and some baby's breath and little baskets and put them on the table where they play cards. We purchased red tablecloths and black napkins. That's a different color than they're used to, so it feels quite different when you walk in. The whole event is red, white, and black. And so they walk in and they see this elegant setting and they're listening to jazz music, which most of them are not listening to at home on a regular basis. And they are speaking with an accent. We practice, it's supposed to be Chicago, but I can't do that to save my life. So they're all New York accents because that's the best I can do. And we walk around and we talk and I dress up. And I wear a dress and a sequined headband with a feather that comes out of it. And they just love it. In fact, the primary omnibus teacher, he always dresses up as Al Capone. So he comes in with his white hat with the black band and talks to them like this, and they have a great time. And the kids really anchor the understanding of the history and build on that as we talk about the rest of the history coming up to the modern times. Just as a thought, feasts and celebrations, one of the things that we want to do is we want to make it sticky. We want to make sure that they understand, and we want to make sure that they're having fun. So my charge to you would be to make teaching contagious, because the notion is we want them to want to be lifelong learners. We want them to remember what we've taught, and hanging all of this on those memory channels that we can use all the senses to do, really does help them to remember what we've taught in the classroom, and it gives you some validity to talk about other things as well. Are there any questions? Both. The murder mystery I use as a springboard to end up going into the Depression of the 30s, honestly, because then I can explain, okay, this is where they were, and this is what resulted from it. With Elrond at Rivendell, that is a springboard. They have finished reading The Hobbit, and then we spring into the Fellowship. So that is all done before they have read those books. And then they can think back, oh, I remember. Mr. Tumnus, we do it, it coincides with when Lucy goes to Mr. Tumnus's cave. I read stories to them when Mr. Tumnus has Lucy come into his cave, you know, he sits down, he gives her tea, and then he talks to her, and she falls asleep as he's playing the flute and telling her about the founding of Narnia. I use that as an opportunity to either tell them a Greek myth or, you know, as the music is going and they are slowly finishing up their food. And sometimes I use, I'll read something like Bennett's Founding Fathers. I'll tell them a story about one of America's founding fathers. That coincides exactly with reading the book. Cair Paravel is at the end. We've gone through all the way through the last battle, and then that's kind of our culminating event for them. So it kind of depends on what works for you and when it works for you. I try to always, the first year, have a planning meeting with a couple people who are excited about the event, and I try to work it around their schedules somewhat. So if they are super busy in December, then we do it in January, or we'll do it in November, and I'll try to adjust around it. And then it becomes something that it doesn't take as much time, and I can put it where I want it. Yes?
So you talked a lot about the 7th, 8th, 9th
graders. Yes. Yes.
I'm too big for my
have. Usually it's the first year of an event that I get that, because after that, the anticipation of knowing what's coming usually takes care of that. The first year with CARE Paravel that we did this, I had a couple young men who decided that they just weren't going to bring in their costume pieces. And what I do is I require them to bring their costume pieces in before the day of the event so that they can't conveniently forget. So they are required to bring in all of their pieces a week before the event, and I keep them with their name around it in a bag. And if they don't, I send an email as a reminder to see if it comes in. And then I keep back, because I hate to say this, because I do have sons and I love boys, but it's usually boys who decide they don't want to dress up. I have a couple extra dryad costumes with black leggings and a little green tunic. That's what they will wear if they don't bring in a costume. That usually solves it. They don't want to be dressed like a dryad. And I'm not shaming them per se, because they're male or female, it's not that kind of thing, but they would much rather look like a very cool fox or a squirrel or a raccoon than not have anything. So they have expanded. I let them do all kinds of things. I had one guy, I don't know if you noticed, in the sword play, he dressed as, I can't remember the name. He wore a kilt. It was one of the Scottish men on the boat, and I've just lost the name completely. But he dressed up that way and was excited. I've had Reepicheep. So when the boys start getting into it, they come up with really clever things. I let them dress as Puddle Glum. That's really easy to do. Put some flippers on their feet, you know, with a straw hat. And I haven't had that problem since the first year, because once they see that you can be creative with it, they actually tend to enter in pretty well. For which one? Monk Day? Marco Polo. Monk, I was going to say, I don't know. We do have a Monk Day that our teacher does in fourth grade, and she just dresses them all up like monks, but there's no feasting involved in that. So they don't have the food, and they're not supposed to talk, and that's. Yeah, we do that, but that's not a feast that I planned. We do Marco Polo. The food that we have for that is when they're in Venice, when he starts out, we have a couple futons at the school, and we put them down flat so they look like boats. You know, use your imagination. And we put up some flags from Italy, and in fact, we found a little roll of printouts that look like buildings, and we put them on the chalkboard. And then they are on the boats, you know, while we're talking to them. And we have some bread, some crusty bread with some oil, and they dip it in, and they talk to them about what they do. And then we give the students a map, and they mark off that they've been to Venice. And then they go to Jerusalem. And there they get the holy oil, and they talk about what goes on in Jerusalem. And that's all they do there. There is no food in Jerusalem. But then when we go to China, we have all kinds of little Chinese foods. We talk about fireworks. We talk about paper money. We show them the different things that were neat and new to Marco Polo when he was there. We let the parents figure out what kind of food they want. We actually have a lady for the last few years who's from China, who her child has long gone from Marco Polo land. And I think her youngest is in seventh grade, and she still wants to do it every year because she gets excited to think about, you know, where she's from. So she actually makes authentic Chinese food and serves that to them. But you wouldn't have to go there. She just keeps volunteering to do it, and it's exciting to her. Then we have a local restaurant that we used to go to that it's 10,000 villages, and they would go, and we would have a meal there that's very different for the students. They go to the South Seas, and we have some seafood, and we have some, I'm trying to think what else we have. I think we had, because they actually talked about some cannibals there, they have some little jelly eyes and stuff, which completely grossed me out to think about. It's just jelly. It's the gummy food. And the boys think that's great fun. They search through the sand, and they find little pearls that we've buried in a little kiddie pool filled with sand. And we bury pearls, and they dig through and find their pearls and put them in their bags. And then they end up coming back, and they have a map then that they have sketched it all out on, and it helps them to remember the journey in a different way than they would just talking about in class. We give them spices to smell. a lot, because Marco Polo talks a lot about the spices. And so we have put like little saucers of spices and they have to guess what they are. And we try to put ones they're not going to be familiar with, like cardamom and various curries, and they smell it. And then, you know, we have the music going. And we actually have found, I don't know why, in Lancaster County, but Goodwill had a run of Indian dress. And so we went and bought for just a few bucks various Indian clothes from India that the girls try on and the boys put on the coats. And that's exciting to them. I don't know why they showed up in a Lancaster, Pennsylvania Goodwill, but they did. So I picked them up. But that's the kind of thing we do. And once you get the first year's planning, then you can start thinking when you're out and about and pick up things for very small prices that just help to build the event. The first year is a huge planning thing. But the excitement that it builds always makes it worth it to me, because that's the one thing that a brick and mortar school can do that you just can't do by yourself, is set up a really cool feast and celebration that helps them to feel like they are actually forming friendships and relationships and those shared memories. And every year when our seniors put their graduation pictures, they do like a video of it, they always have pictures from way back of them all dressed up in these little costumes that they put in there. It's a special memory for them. So, are there any other questions? Yeah. It does, I know. Well, you gotta remember, all of these are like refrigerator boxes, and I fold them up. And in our school, I have a classroom, and it's an old elementary school that we're in, and so it's got those doors that you pull open, and it's got the hooks where the kids would have hung their coats and their backpacks. And I put them in plastic tubs. I have like 3 plastic tubs for the murder mystery dinner. I have 3 for Rivendell. We probably have 4 for Marco Polo, and that one we have the kiddie pool. That one has to go on the stage because that's just big. But when you fold things up and put them in these tubs, they don't take that much room. I have 5 events in that one closet because all of these things fold flat or roll up onto rolls. I know it seems overwhelming. What I hope that you walk away with is the notion that if I can do it, you can do it. None of this stuff is hard, and none of it requires that you be a costume designer or that you be a set designer for a play. They're all very straightforward ways of doing it. I've been really blessed to have some creative moms around me who can help me come up with some of these thoughts, and I'd love to pass that on because I want kids to be excited about what they're learning, and I want them to remember it with not just the, yeah, that was a cool story, but yeah, do you remember? Do you remember what we did? That's when we grab their hearts, and that's when we set them on fire so that they want to keep going. Other questions? Well, thank you for your time. Go plan some feasts. Oh, I'm sorry, I have handouts.